you're not going to be getting normal oxygen sensor readings. So don't even, he said, it's essentially worthless at that point, because once she's developing a fever and all the blood is leaving her extremities, it's going to her core to raise the body temperature. Unless you have a pretty sophisticated oxygen sensor that clips onto the ear, which is what we have in the hospital setting, you're probably not going to be getting an accurate O2 reading. And he said, as long as you see that she's not, her breathing is not labored and she's, you know, just simply developing a fever, keep your eye on the fever, make sure it doesn't go over the 103. But I mean, a fever is a fever, and a fever is not necessarily a bad thing. You can try to control it with Tylenol if you want to. But once I heard that, once he explained that, it really took all the fear out of it. It then just became, oh, why didn't they tell us that to begin with? Mm-hmm. Now, my sister, on the other hand, at that point, we're now in the middle of week two of the COVID. And I had one sister who just couldn't get her head off the pillow, just couldn't get up. She literally was just living on, I think, watermelon. Watermelon and water was about it. And I couldn't imagine, since we're pretty close in age, pretty close in size, pretty close in fitness levels and in health, why she was hit so hard. Like, why is she still incapacitated, essentially? And why am I able to run around and make meals and take care of people? Why? It didn't make much sense until she explained that she had been taking Tylenol every day to try to control her fevers. And I told her, you got to stop taking the Tylenol. I mean, Tylenol blocks healing. So she stopped that day. And the following day, she was up and about. I mean, it was like, she said, I don't know if it was the Tylenol, but I stopped it yesterday and today I feel great. So I'm pretty convinced it was the Tylenol. And definitely it did not help her to recover. It didn't help her to get back on the path. My coughing was gone. Well, in the interim, now you talk about therapies. I don't know if you want to talk at this point about the treatments.
Yeah. So at some point you get sick of all of the standard medical approach.
Well, as soon as we realized, like, okay, this, we're done with COVID. I knew that we needed alternative therapy. I mean, I knew that mainstream hospitals and physicians were not willing to provide any treatment, that really the only therapy they wanted to provide was the vaccination. That mm-hmm. was it, the shot. And none of us were willing to do that.
Which, of course, isn't therapy anyway.
Of course not.
I mean, no vaccination is a therapy. It's to keep you from getting it, or to mitigate the symptoms. But it's not therapy once you've got it.
Well, it used to be a vaccine was to try to prevent you from getting a disease.
Yeah, right? but I mean, so it was never a therapy.
No,
so
it's not a therapy. So
they're telling you when you're sick, you got to get the vaccination.
Yes, over and over again. The emergency room physicians, the nurses, everyone saying, vaccinate, you got to get a vaccine. Get the vaccine. You need to get the vaccine. Are you ready for the vaccine now? Now you should really get the vaccine. Don't you wish you'd gotten the vaccine? You really should be getting this vaccine. It was, all the talk was the vaccine. So I knew enough to know we really need an alternative to this. So I went online to the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance and pulled up the iMask Plus protocol, the Prevention and Early Outpatient Treatment Protocol for COVID-19. And so they explained to you there how to get access to the ivermectin, which was critically important. They also have it's an antibiotic. So those two require the
Z-Pack?
I don't know that it's called a Z-Pack.
Zithromycin?
Yes, I think that is it.
Yeah, they're called Z-Pack. Yeah, okay. So that's part of the protocol, and zinc is?
Well, there are other things that were not prescription related. Uh-huh. So there were plenty of things that I could get on my own for everybody. But the two that required the prescription, if you go through the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, you can get access to physicians who are willing to consult with you through telemedicine and to help you get access to those two prescriptions. So as soon as we could get in, and it took us essentially from the moment we knew we were dealing with COVID to actually get to have an appointment with one, I think it was maybe 4 days later. Mm-hmm. So at that point, he was willing to send our prescriptions to the local pharmacy. I thought we could get them filled at the local pharmacy. That's how naive I was. So we had them sent to the local pharmacy. And so I then thought, oh, great, I may be picking up all these prescriptions. And I had already acquired everything else from the, you know, vitamin D, vitamin C, quercetin, zinc, all of those things we had already acquired. So we were in the process of already taking those, but we didn't have the ivermectin yet, and we didn't have the
azithromycin.
The azithromycin. So the physician was fabulous. He spent a lot of time with each one of us. He sent prescriptions over to our local pharmacy, and then I got the phone call from the pharmacy. It was a pharmacy tech telling me, what is this ivermectin for? I said, what do you care what the ivermectin is for? And she said, well, I need to know what the ivermectin is for. And I said, why would you care if it's for, you know, whatever? And she said, well, I said, why aren't you asking about the other prescription? And she said, well, because the state of New Hampshire's Board of Pharmacy has directed the pharmacies in New Hampshire not to fill prescriptions for ivermectin if it's for COVID. And I said, so if I have, you know, some sort of a, I don't know, like a bizarre infection of some other kind, you would fill this prescription. And she said, yes, but not for COVID. So she said, you need to send this prescription back to your doctor, and he needs to write on it what it's for. And if it's for COVID, we will not be filling it. And I said, well, why don't you just send my prescriptions to another pharmacy? I will give you another pharmacy you can send them to. And she said, absolutely not. That's not legal. So we contacted the physician again, and he sent it to a different pharmacy. And that pharmacy was out of state, but provided services to the three states around us. So, but they called me and said that they can't fill the one standard prescription, but they could fill the other prescription, the ivermectin. And they wanted to know where we wanted to have the second prescription sent. And I said, what do you
wait
mean?
Wait a minute, that's illegal.
I didn't think you could do that. And his response was, we do it every single day. So we ultimately got the ivermectin and the Z-Pack, whatever you call it, filled. And we started taking it 2 or 3 days later. But at that point, I had already had the COVID for probably, at that point, maybe 8 or 9 days. So I know you're supposed to be taking this within the first 5 days, really, to have the most effective response. I noticed a response right away, even though I was feeling much better than everyone else. I noticed it almost immediately after taking the ivermectin and all the other things that it really does have an impact. I can't imagine the impact it would have if you took it within the first 5 days, because I could feel the impact after, you know, 9 days of having been battling COVID. So all of us, well, four of the five of us went on to that protocol and did well. And everyone seemed to respond. My one sister did not go on that protocol, and she also developed viral pneumonia, and is still recovering.
Wow, wow. Now, what would you say? So, based upon your experience as a lawyer and dealing with some medical malpractice, I know that you're not in a position to accuse these folks of, explicitly of malpractice, but you know sort of the earmarks of some of these things, and you know some of the legal doctrines that that touch upon medical treatment. What would you say is the cause of this? Is it ignorance? Is it an agenda? What do you think?
I think it's multifaceted, frankly. I think you have regulators that are, and that was the world that I was in for over 21 years. I think the regulators are captive, and by the industry, by that I mean the pharmaceutical industry.
Meaning government regulators?
Government regulators mm-hmm. are captive. And I think that the pharmaceutical industry is the big bear in the room, and the regulators, I think, are captured. I think that's one aspect of it. I think another is you have the corporate practice doctrine alive and well, and that's really the whole idea behind that is most states in the United States recognize the corporate practice doctrine, which is that we only authorize and allow licensed professionals to practice a profession. And that makes sense because they are trained and educated, mm-hmm. right, in their particular profession, and they understand the risks and the consequences of their conduct, and they're held responsible for their conduct. Well, what happens is that the corporate practices doctrine is just that. It's where a corporation, where a non-licensed entity tries to exert control or domination over a profession. And that's been happening. That has happened many, many times in many professions. But it really reared its ugly head in the profession of optometry early on. And we're going back over maybe 100 years ago. Maybe not even quite 100 years ago, but a long time ago. And so it's been quite a while that that particular profession has been dominated by the optical industry. And so the whole point of the laws, we're trying to separate the two to protect the integrity of the profession. Well, I think you have that happening here. I think what you have is you have an enormous industry, pharmaceuticals, and they wield extraordinary power. And they, when they throw their weight around, little guys, I think, get sidelined. Mm-hmm. And not everyone is, you know, is willing to be Davy against Goliath.
Yeah.
So you have some very brave, very honorable people like the folks who are standing up. I mean, the folks who are there at frontline COVID-19 critical care protocol and all the other physicians who are standing up.
Dr. Zelenko,
God bless him. Mm-hmm. So there are others that are standing up. They're willing to be the Davy versus Goliath. But then you have a significant number of doctors that don't want, that know that they probably should stand up and are too afraid to stand up, too afraid of the consequences to them personally if they stand up. And
they don't want to miss the payments on their Beamer.
Well, there's that, and they also don't want to be ridiculed by their friends. You know, remember, in that hospital setting, everyone around them is preaching the get the jab as the resolution. And even if you know that that's not going to help people, to stand up against your peers and your colleagues in that setting, I think you have to be willing to be a Davy versus Goliath. But then you have this, you know, maybe I'm hoping perhaps that it's a small segment of them that are just don't care, just wicked and have no moral compass and or have lost their way and simply don't care.
Well, just to go back and talk a little bit more about the medical practice doctrine or the corporate practice doctrine, which isn't just the case in medicine, but in other professions as well.
Yes.
The idea is that it's a conflict of interest, right? I mean, this is to prevent a conflict of interest.